This is Earth Tribe Radio, www.earthtriberadio.com. Hey, Joe.
Fiona.
Hey, Leslie. We have Leslie Clark here with us today. We're having wonderful stories from the Sahara and from the Tuareg. You were just talking about the fact that you absorbed more. You kind of seemed to get it more when you didn't know the language than when you did know the language.
Well, it was, language was kind of problematic, because the first time I went in to try and meet these nomads, the Tuareg were in rebellion, and they had always been the people, because they know the Sahara Desert, they had always been the people that were the guides. They were forbidden from being guides because they were in rebellion, so they were not, that was not possible. So we got a guide from the south, who was from an ethnic group that didn't really like nomads. I didn't know this at the time, and he seemed like he was a very friendly guy. But what I found after a while is, and after I started learning the language, was that he was interpreting things the way he wanted me to believe the nomads. He wanted to kind of twist my opinion of the nomads by the way he interpreted things. And I really worked actively to try and learn the language. But I'm writing a book now, and I'm going back through my journals to kind of re-experience. I haven't looked at them in 20, 25 years. And to try and re-experience the things that I did when I first got there. And I'm finding that when I did learn the language, it did straighten out a lot of things. I understood what they were trying to tell me more, but I was more observant and absorbed more when I couldn't speak. I was being quiet and just looking. And there's a lot of communication that happens without language, and which did happen for me, but also just the not having to think about translating and think about, I was open. I was able to take things in that would be kind of erased. It's like, for me, you know, I hate to take videos because it shuts out the you're looking at one little thing. And it's the same thing with language. If you're talking to one person, you're so focused on that you're missing out on everything that's happening around you. And that's what Jill just mentioned, that you were very quiet
when
we were traveling. But because of that, you were able to absorb so much. And I found the same thing.
How was it for you, Jill?
Well, it's very hard to find the words to describe it, because it's very different from our culture, and I'm used to being in a lot of different cultures. And this was perhaps the deepest experience I've had, being in almost a primal place with people.
In writing my book, I've been talking to a woman who said, you know, we are the people of the word, but they are not. It was not, language and writing has never been a part of their...
Exactly. And I also felt that they heard me, even though I didn't speak. They heard me.
Absolutely.
You don't need so much the words. And there was one moment when we were leaving the dunes, and Leslie had said to me, they get very sad, the Tuareg, when you're leaving the dunes. And so off we went, and I could feel their sadness and their happiness when they got to the dunes, and then the sadness when we left. So I always travel with these bubbles. I don't know if you remember, so I took out the bubbles. They couldn't see what I was doing, but I just started blowing bubbles, and all of a sudden there was something new, and what was this, and where is it coming from, and just without saying a word, and then I put it away, I think, but it was just
a moment of joy.
An experiencing, being able to give them something without words, and I could only do that because I could feel them, you know, in their emotions.
I have always been astonished at how perceptive both the Wahdabi and the Tuareg are. Anytime I take a group of people in, they know those people's personalities instantly. They will say, oh, this person's kind of grumpy. This person is so open and cheerful. And they absolutely understand the depth of people's personalities before I do, even if I don't know the people. Because sometimes I've taken tourists in that I don't really know, and they'll always say, this person, you got to be careful with this person, or you got to, I mean, they get it. They're so perceptive and intuitive about that.
And that's something we've lost in our culture. We don't have, and the joy of experiencing that, it was profound for me. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Leslie.
And so the culture with few words, is there anything else you want to say? That's so interesting to me that they have really don't communicate so much with words, and yet, which makes sense, they're so incredibly perceptive. Mm-hmm. Is there anything?
Well, I mean, they do have a lot of words when they're sitting around and not working. They are chattering away all the time, mm-hmm. always telling stories, laughing. And I know every time, just recently I had an experience where we expanded our midwife training program into the desert, and the nomads who live in the pasture lands, which is like a 2-day drive to the desert, they don't experience the dunes. They experience their part of the desert. We decided to take one of our experienced midwives that we'd trained from the pasture land in to help us train, because the people that we're training are illiterate women who have never had any kind of formal programs, educational programs. So we wanted her, because she was Tuareg and the women we were training were Tuareg, we wanted her to be able to express her experience. It worked very well. Mm-hmm. At first it was a little tricky because she spoke a little bit different dialect than they did, but then they got it. They figured it out right away. We also took a man who happened to be her son-in-law, and he has been, I think you met Musa.
That Musa?
No, a different Musa.
Yes, okay. I did meet Musa. Yeah.
And he's been our just anything we need. He always shows up. He brought his family to live at Thomas Nye. He is just a helpful guy. And we've given him the title of an honorary midwife because he knows the programs, because he helps us translate all the time. And everybody knows him so well that it's not uncomfortable to have a man there. Anyway, so he came along. He had never been to the dunes. Fatima had never been to the dunes.
Oh, Fatima.
And they... it was just so miraculous watching them experience this thing that this is legendary. Dunes are, for them, are, you know, they've heard about this all their lives, but they're right next to there, but it would take them, you know, a week on a camel, and they don't have time to do that, to get out there just to see it. They can't be tourists in that way. And so the thing that really struck me when we had, I'd see them both just out wandering, and I knew how profound it was for them. And the thing that Musa said as we were leaving, he says, this is going to be lots of stories around the fire.
Oh, yes, I love it. Because that's how that's their evenings,
yeah,
is
that's
stories
their
around the fire.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that in a sense with... my great-grandfather actually traveled to Egypt. He was one of those people looking for tombs in the early 1900s.
Oh.
Never found one, I don't believe. But he went and spent some time with the Bedouin in their tents. But do you think that as a culture, as a Western culture, all the rushing around we're doing, all the tourists, you know, looking for something different, rather than being okay with who we are, and I'm not judging because I've traveled a lot, we all have. Is there something, I mean, we've lost something, haven't we?
Well, it's interesting you say that, because that's what led me to them in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
I was in Guatemala, and I met a culture, the Lacandones, who had never been affected by the Spanish conquest. And I asked, I met the son of the chief, because I was at this conference on Mayan, with Mayan experts, and I met the son of the chief of the Lacandones, and I hadn't known anything about them, except I had been there the year before and seen this guy in one of the Mayan ruins that had long black hair and a white tunic, and he was in the ruins, and I asked what he was doing there, and they said, well, that's the Lacandon. They're not really allowed to be here because it's reserved for tourists. Well, this was one of their sacred sites, and they were I said, well, it's obvious that they are still here regardless of what the laws are. But anyway, I asked to follow this chief around through the rainforest, and I did a whole series of paintings on him. And we couldn't communicate. He couldn't speak Spanish or English. I couldn't speak his language. But there was such a strong sense of who he was. He had walked in to this exhibition hall at Palenque, where I was doing an exhibition of paintings, and he walked up to this painting, and he's dressed in his long white tunic and his dark hair and black hair, and he walks up to this painting that I had done from that person I'd seen in the ruin the year before, and he said, that's my brother. And so that's how I got connected with him. But it was so incredible to be with him for 2 days. He just let me, and I felt like an elephant going through the forest. I mean, he would just slip through. I'd see someone waiting that I have to let in. Could you?
Oh, sure.
I had this incredible experience for a couple of days with Kayum, and I did a whole series of paintings on him. Well, I was invited to go back to another Mayan conference the next year in Palenque, and the Zapatista uprising happened, and I couldn't go. They said, you can't come, it's too dangerous. So I thought, I've saved the money, I've set up the amount of time, where could I find this kind of self-assurance? He was so comfortable in his skin. I thought, this guy, he doesn't speak anybody's language. He steps into this, you know, Western, I mean, well, he lives in, it was his homeland, but we'd built
the rainforest.
He lives in the rainforest. And they were never affected by the Spanish conquest because they lived so remotely in the rainforest. Nobody ever found them. And their language, that's what helped the experts when they found the Lacandones and communicated with them. That's what helped the experts translate the glyphs. Because it was a continuous culture for 2,000 years. And so I thought, I really want more of this, but where would I find it? And then I thought, Africa. And that's what took me to Africa the very first time.
Wow. So if people, because our culture is generally so insecure and so not okay with who they are as a culture, you know, who am I? People just get so lost in trying to find that and lost in doing that, you know, as they get the journey. But it takes a while to find. What would you suggest from all of your wisdom from the touring that you've done with the Touareg? What pieces could help people here?
Well, I think it's one of the things that we have so much information. We have so many choices. And we're such a mixed breed. I mean, we're how many different, you know, we've got English and French and Chinese and Italian and whatever ancestors. And also, indigenous cultures like that have rites of passage. Mm-hmm. So they know, okay, I can't do this until I kill a lion, or these kinds of things. The Wadabi have a marriage festival, and it's totally, and when the young people are teenagers, that's what they do. They go out, they're allowed to be totally free, but it's condoned. You can go and find who you want to be with. And but then, you know, once you find that person, then there's all these the rules are very strict in a certain way. I mean, they're lax in some of our ways of thinking, but they're very specific. And so people are very secure in what they're supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. I can't do this. When you're a kid until you're about 5 years old, you get to do anything you want. You can go to sleep whenever you want. You're totally, and you're just coddled and adored. After you're 5 years old, you got to do the chores. Now, you can stay up until all night long if you want to dance with all your friends because it's festival time and you hear the grown-ups dancing and singing. You can do that, but you still have to get up and do your chores. So they have these very specific tasks that and rites of passage that allow them to be comfortable with what they're doing.
And who they are.
And I think that we have, it's very, we've lost a lot of those specific things that help people, give people guidance. And we have so many choices. I remember I used to envy people like Michelangelo and Rembrandt who had, you can trace exactly what influence they had, what artists they saw that influenced their work, because they only saw 10 different artists or whatever. Now we have millions upon millions of artists that could influence. It's so many choices. How can you not be confused?
Supermarket of choices.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard not to be confused, but...
Were there any gifts that you found here when you came back that you hadn't had before? Like things you realized in this culture you valued?
That's a...
Tough one.
Let's see.
And how did your life maybe change here when you got back?
I think that some of the things that I, like... Patience. I've learned it's just a waste of time to be angry and to be impatient. That I definitely learned from them. I would indulge myself in impatience before that. It's hard. That's a hard one.
It's hard for you to say because you know who you are. You know who you are. Mm-hmm. You're already there. You haven't been in a place that so many people are that they're still searching. So when you went there and you came back, you're still the same person.
Mm-hmm.
You learned about people communicating in other words than words, mm-hmm. in other ways than words, which is fundamental, but it's almost like when, just listening to you talk, and you might want to cut this out, I don't know, but I'm listening to the indigenous people in the Lacandon rainforest and the Tuareg and the Wodabi, and although they might have a religion and a thing that they believe in, as well as you do your chores at this time when you get up,
mm-hmm.
But they haven't been influenced by a Christianity which enforces a right and a wrong.
And the
school systems,
mm-hmm.
which tell you how to think and what to think about,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, and all those outside forces, that whether it be religious or a school system or something, they're kind of confused. It's not, I mean, when you've got just a family group that's telling you these are, you know, and an extended family group that's telling you this is what the right, the Wadabi's religion is a code of behavior.
Yes.
And
it's the same thing as the Lakota people. Their mm-hmm. religion is really a code of behavior, of
and
generosity.
The only punishment is ostracism.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing Piroji told me once that I really stuck. He said, "If they don't have kind of formal sit down and tell people how to behave. You have to behave as an example. So if my son," he said, "if my son behaves badly, it means that he saw me behaving badly."
That is such a wonderful thing mm-hmm. to share. Mm-hmm. So that is one of the great gifts to bring back, actually, isn't it? Mm-hmm. It's like we're not trying, don't need to try to change the child, but change ourselves. Mm-hmm. Wonderful gift.
I can't wait to read this book.
What is it going to be called? Do you know?
Memory and a Paintbrush.
Mm. And when do you think it will be available?
Well, I'm about 200 pages in, and I'm not even halfway through my saga. So it's not edited yet, so I'm just writing. But it's so fun to go through my journals and remember these things that, you know, have just kind of slipped away. But journals and sketches are so much more effective than a photograph in helping me remember the experience. I really have it. I can smell it.
Well, through your paintings, you get the sense of the whole. With a photograph, occasionally mm-hmm. it's not, but for most photographs, it's just a picture. Mm-hmm. You don't. So, how long do you think it's going to take you? Another year or?
Well, in my retirement, I have my husband and I are restoring a vintage Airstream, and we're going to take off, and that's my project while we're traveling.
Go
around the country and just be, see our beautiful country, because we haven't...
Take notes and photographs and sketches there, too.
You're going to make a blog as you go, too?
I don't know. I haven't decided.
I think that would be wonderful for people to be able to follow on with you, and as you travel around with your thoughts and your
what you're memory. Discovering yeah. about your country as yeah. you travel.
That's interesting. I know that my presence and my interaction with people is going to be much more internet based after I close the gallery. Yes. So I will probably have to do that. But I've kind of avoided too much time on the computer so far.
Let me gift you the title of my book, because mm-hmm. It came to me when I got back from Niger with you, called Down the Wadi and Up the Wazoo. And that'll cover it all.
That's a good one.
So if people wanted to, you won't be able to come in here to buy things, how can people still buy your paintings?
Well, I will be selling paintings and jewelry online. And I will be initially selling, Human Arts is going to be handling my paintings.
Oh, great. Mm-hmm. Oh, great. So I can sit with my friends while you're off in the Airstream.
Well, thank you so much. This has been, there have been some real gems in this last piece that we just did. Thank you. This is Earth Tribe Radio, www.earthtriberadio.com.
Your home on planet Earth.